into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football. On Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Minimal contact in stadiums? Shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Okay, so it was supposed to be an exciting week of FA Cup action, but unfortunately some of the bigger fixtures have had completely overshadowed by the COVID-19 situation, particularly the one that we want to talk about now, and that's Aston Villa against Liverpool. I'm delighted to say Melissa Reddy is with us to talk about this and some of the issues surrounding it. Melissa, I think Villa fans like myself were very much looking forward to see what would happen in the first match between these two sides. And earlier in the week, I would have been gung-ho about Villa's chances and putting out a good team. And now all of a sudden, it looks like it could literally be a team of kids who take the field for Aston Villa tonight. So we've kind of been robbed of what looked like the best fixture of the weekend.
Yeah, and it's actually quite unfortunate, I think, in an Aston Villa sense, because the team, the way they've been playing in the league, with the confidence, just how they've been moving the ball so positively and stuff, you felt that the FA Cup could have presented a chance for them to get close to landing some silverware this season. And now, because of the COVID situation, they're forced to field kids because there's no space in the calendar for any sort of, you know, to postpone the fixture to give them a better chance of going through. And with these things, it's no real fault of the team itself. There's been massive positive tests in the bubble. That's not necessarily to say that anyone's, you know, flouted the rules. It's just the way that the new virus seems to be spreading. That's why we're getting so many more positive tests in football at the moment. And it feels short-sighted from the authorities. I know they're in such a difficult position to try and, you know, navigate a global pandemic and keep football on the go and try to still hold all their competitions and stuff. But the fact that there was no sort of foresight or wherewithal to think, you know what, coronavirus could have a massive impact on the season or stages of the season. We need to keep weekends and weekdays free if we need to rearrange any fixtures. And, you know, they haven't done that. Now Villa have to field kids. I'm sure Liverpool will have a lot of academy players in their side too. But when I was looking at the fixtures a while ago and how things had turned out, I really felt Villa had a strong chance of going quite far in this competition.
Yeah, no, I think that they were one of the teams who could actually properly go for it and put out your first team and try with, you know, knowing that they're going to be safe this season, which is an unusual scenario for Villa over the last decade or so. Let's talk a little bit about Liverpool, though, because it was interesting. We had David Myler on during the week on OTBAM, and he was making the point that in the post-match interview, he was surprised to hear Jordan Henderson talking about the Man United game. He did mention Villa in the same breath, but it was clear that they had already turned their minds to this massive top-of-the-table fixture next week. Now they can do that with impunity because they don't need to put out a really good team. Do you think it was Klopp's intention anyway, irrespective of the Villa situation, to essentially give as many of his first choice players a rest after what happened last week? Or was he more of a mind, do you think, to try and play them to get them back into some form?
It is always such a delicate balance, and Liverpool find themselves in a situation where they have so many senior players out injured that trying to balance the rotation with rhythm becomes even more of a tricky situation. You have to kind of have both. If you don't have rhythm, you're actually at risk of getting more injuries. It's part of the prevention process, you know, so your muscles become accustomed to playing and stuff, because you can never match training intensity in a match situation. at the same time, if you are risking players in games, you know, there's a greater chance that you're going to lose more of them. I think from Klopp's tenure, it's very easy to deduce that he has put his stock in the league and in European competitions, and the domestic cups have been given less of a priority or an importance, which, to be fair, in the greater scheme of things, it's how it shakes up if you're at an elite club. When you hear all managers speak about it, I know Maurizio Pochettino was a big one as well that said you have to be consistently in the Champions League and at the top end of the Premier League table. Winning an FA Cup or a League Cup along the way might help the psychology of winning, but in terms of being tangible for a club, it doesn't really matter much.
Yeah, I'm with you on, I actually don't think, and this is a debate that we've been having all week here, you know, Jose Mourinho would point to the trophies that he had at Manchester United to suggest that his time there was a success. But we know that Manchester United judge themselves on league titles and where they finish in the Champions League. So winning the Europa League is great, but it's not really. Actually finishing in the top four every single season and being in quarterfinals and semifinals of the Champions League and giving yourself a chance to win that is far more important. So is it your sense that even now, when Jurgen Klopp knows that his squad is strong enough to compete in both the Champions League and the European Cup, that still the FA Cup doesn't really matter that much to him?
Yeah, I think this season of all seasons, he has been a strong advocate for player welfare. From the time he came into the league, he was talking about, you know, the winter break and how beneficial it is for other European sides and how you see it on the international stage in terms of European teams that have well-rested players versus, you know, England in tournament competitions and stuff. And it's so ironic that last year, you know, he sent the kids to play Aston Villa because Liverpool were also competing in the World Club Cup in Qatar. And this time around, it's Aston Villa who are forced to field their kids because of a situation out of their control. But I think it's often when you're deciding what's more important, it's the state of a club at any given time. Now, for Tottenham, since you mentioned them, if they win any competition this season, whether it's the League Cup or FA Cup or whatever it is, for them, they have taken that step to become winners. They've been a sustainable team. They've been at the top end of the Premier League. You know, they've reached a Champions League final. They've been consistent in European competition. But what they haven't got is something to show for any of that. So they've done that other bit. And for them, this will feel like a success. And Mourinho will feel like what he came in to do, he's done. He's taken them over that line. From there, obviously, it would be, well, now you have to be concrete challengers for the Premier League and you have to actually make inroads in Europe's elite competition. But for a team like Liverpool, the FA Cup won't register when they're trying to defend their league crown and when they're trying to get as far in Europe as possible.
Yeah, you can clearly see that. I do wonder about, since you bring up Mourinho, just how... like say they finish fifth and win the FA Cup, what will the Spurs fans think when next season kicks off and they're celebrating the fact that they've got a trophy, but actually they're not in the Champions League?
That's always a delicate balance. And I think that they'll still be happy because psychologically it's that thing that they've wondered about their team. When can we be winners? And to them that will signify, okay, it's a slight step back, but we've taken that massive step forward in a mental sense. And they'll feel that Mourinho can, you know, restore them to the Champions League. I think we have completely recalibrated how we think of Spurs, primarily because of the work Maurizio Pochettino did there. None of us had ever thought before his time there that Spurs should be genuinely competing for trophies, let alone, you know, the Premier League or being a force in the Champions League. And it'll be, the question you pose is quite an interesting one for me, because Pochettino gave them sustainability without the silverware. So if Mourinho gives them silverware without that sustainability, without that, you know, climate of always being in the Champions League and stuff, it'll be interesting to see how the argument goes, because, you know, what people always tried to throw at Pochettino was he never won a trophy. And sometimes in football, trophies aren't everything.
Look, again, I think that even if you look at Klopp, when he started at Liverpool, they got beaten in a couple of finals. And for some people, it was some kind of stick to beat him with. But it was like, hang on a second, they're actually performing really well in the league. They've made clear progress. It's a Champions League final that they went and they lost. It's not like, so obviously they lost the Europa League final as well. I didn't feel like that was a team that had a psychological barrier. I just felt like the team weren't good enough just yet. And it was when the team got good enough, they started to win. That's the difference.
Yeah, I've done the book Believe Us, and in it he says you have to lose big to realize you can win, and to realize you can win big without the lessons that they got from all those setbacks, from missing out in big finals because they weren't streetwise enough or they didn't really understand how to manage the game as well as they should have. That helped them in Madrid to finally get over the line. And when you look at that game, that's probably the worst Liverpool have performed in a final under Jurgen Klopp, and it's the one they win because they started to get it in their heads that in a final, it's just the result that matters. You manage the game expertly only to do what you need to do. Whereas against Real Madrid in Kiev, they were the better side, they played better football, and the game didn't go their way, so it showed some growth. And I think you have to be able to see a final is basically a scoreline, and you can't determine, you know, the long-term progress of a team from just one scoreline. I think you have to look at the full picture. And that will be so important for Liverpool this season. While it was already going to be an unthankful one because of all the fixtures squeezed into a short period of time, their defensive crisis means that there isn't really room to maneuver. And for me, the biggest thing about having no senior fit center backs is that it's actually really hampering their attacking play, their build-up. And, you know, Klopp has said it's unlikely they're going to do anything in the market to resolve that in January. And Liverpool's rivals will be eating that up. They'll be lapping up the situation. That race is so tight and there's so many teams involved. And I just don't think it's sustainable for Liverpool to have to play much of the season with no fit senior centre-backs.
Why do you think they aren't signing a centre-back?
I actually think Klopp is right in what he says. January is a tricky market in general. It's complicated by coronavirus in the financial impact teams have had with what they can spend, but also in a different sense, you sign a player and then you might have to isolate for 2 weeks for, you know, depending on which country you're signing him from and what the rules are at the moment. And it's changing so often that it's hard to keep track of that. Then there is the other element of, if you're signing a player in January based on your current situation, that centre-back has to come in and walk into the starting 11, essentially. Otherwise, what is the point of signing him now? You know, if he's a long-term move, if you're making a short-term signing, he has to come in and slot in seamlessly. Very few signings under Jurgen Klopp have come in straight into the 11 because he is a very demanding manager. The system takes a lot of practice. There's actually no training time at the moment because there's so many games. So essentially the matches are being used as training. So how do you try to, you know, help somebody through this adjustment phase? And if there is an adjustment phase, when do they actually get to the point of helping the team out? I think if Liverpool can get one of their long-term targets now, they'll absolutely do it. I think if there's a creative way to find a solution, perhaps a loan or getting a player that's unattached, so not involved with any club at the moment, and, you know, just want him to help out with a few games, it's not going to cost you much, then maybe. But the thinking of the club has always been, it's better to make no move than make the wrong move, especially if you can do the right one in due time. And when we discuss them, we always talk about how smart they are in terms of recruitment. So it feels hard to be critical with, you know, whatever they're thinking. It's such a hard thing to ask a squad to go an entire season in the league, like the Premier League, with the race so close, and say to them, you know, mentality monsters, you have to do this without any fit centre backs.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, and I buy the point about the 2 weeks, and then the integration period for most players has been a couple of months. So Diogo Jota obviously slotted straight in and was immediately impactful. But a lot of them have, you know, Andy Robertson took a couple of months and has turned out to be an absolute superstar, but you don't really have that time. Maybe if somebody was to contribute in the last four or five games, it could still be worth whatever the betting in period is. That's how close it's going to be. So the risk benefit analysis, I'm sure that they've done, it would need to kind of be in the next couple of days though, really, if it's going to have an impact even at that point, to give themselves the best chance of success. It sounds like you don't think they're going to do anything. This isn't just Klopp putting out the smoke screen and then them suddenly appearing with a shiny new toy at some point before the end of January.
I think when he says it's unlikely, it's because the current circumstances actually mean that if they do manage to get something over the line, it will be, I won't say a surprise to themselves as well, but it would be quite an accomplishment to do that, given the restrictions financially, timescale-wise, stylistically, what they'd be looking for, availability, which clubs are going to let their players go in January, given that this is such a weird season for everyone. Clubs want cash up front as well, because they're all in dire straits. And the deals Liverpool had done previously in the summer are all very creative deals. Thiago's fee was over the course of his contract, so Liverpool weren't paying a massive fee to buy in Munich up front. With Diogo Jota, Wolves accepted only 10% of the fee in the first year. So these kind of agreements help get the big deals over the line. I can't see, you know, you think of an elite centre back that's going to walk into that first 11. I don't see how they'd be available or they'd be affordable at present. Then you're looking shorter term and you're thinking you're going to need somebody to just come in and plug a hole who's hopefully not that mediocre. And again, even those kind of players are not the easiest to get in the current climate. But I think when he says unlikely, there's two parts to it. It's because it is a lot of work to get something that makes sense over the line right now. But the other thing is, you do not want clubs to know you're desperate to sign in any position. And even when they can see you're desperate because they know what your defensive problem is, you don't want to keep saying that or giving that perception publicly. And a very good example with this would be when Liverpool went after Alisson. They'd been in discussions with him for a while. Once the Champions League final in Kiev happened and Loris Karius, made those two errors, he was concussed or whatever, Roma tagged on, I think their initial, the starting point was something like 50 million. After the final in Kiev, it jumped. They wanted like £92 million for Alisson. And Liverpool came out and said, we're walking away from the deal. No way. You know, we're happy with what we got. We'll look at alternatives. Not that those points were particularly true, but they weren't going to spend that amount of money on Alisson, and they wanted Roma to know it. And, you know, they waited until, I think it was like a month and a half later, and then they ended up on something like £65 million in total, the entire package. So oftentimes this, what you say publicly can impact a transfer fee.
A huge amount of money in the difference. And look, it's clear they are desperate. You can look at the centre backs that they lined up with Southampton last weekend. Is there a sense that he doesn't quite trust the young players at centre back, and that's why he's gone back to the reconstituted midfielders? Is it too early for them? Like, are they going to make it? I guess I'm wondering, will they be squad players in the next 18 months? Or are these the type of players that Liverpool, that we've seen so well over the last couple of years, give some game time to in the Premier League and then sell for 10, 15, 20 million?
It's a difficult question to answer in a number of respects. I think first, what I've noticed with the selection at centre backs is it's been done for tactical reasons, depending on how another team plays. So if you need a fast centre back, he's chosen to go with Rhys Williams because, you know, he's got good recovery pace, especially if you're playing against trickier, nippy teams, he tends to go with him. If there's going to be a lot of aerial duels, he's gone for Nat Phillips, who is better in the air. And with Jordan Henderson alongside Fabinho, he probably would have thought it gives Liverpool greater control and experience because Southampton are a very good side with the ball and without the ball. It didn't work out in an offensive sense much, but Liverpool had managed to restrict Southampton, even though Danny Ings scored that amazing goal and they ended up losing. But I think the selection hasn't been to do with trust in so much as it's done for tactical reasons, depending on how the other team sets up. But the other thing is, Williams is 19 and he really shouldn't be having to play every single week or multiple times a week alongside a midfielder as his centre-back partner to try and, you know, learn his trade. That's a little bit unfair. I think as well, physically, it's quite demanding, especially at the highest level. Liverpool are not a team just trying to play matches and get by. They have ambitions of, you know, defending their league title successfully and reaching another Champions League final. To ask a 19-year-old to carry that responsibility at centre-back is quite difficult. And I think it's just trying to spread the workload as much as possible.
Okay, fair enough. Melissa, we're way out of time. I presume the Liverpool kids / B team are going to thrash Aston Villa's under-15s or whatever it is they're playing tonight?
You know what? I don't know what's going to happen in any of the fixtures in the FA Cup. And it's quite sad because some of these games, and Marine against Tottenham is a good example, it's the biggest night in Marine's 127-year history. It should be bouncing with fans. You know, Crosby should be absolutely alive with fireworks and such. And it just feels like, meh, it's just a game on TV, another game on TV. And I know we've had this debate for a while now about, is the FA Cup, does it still have meaning? And this season of all seasons, it feels like it just doesn't.
That's a fair point to wrap this up on. Melissa Reddy, thanks a million for joining us. You can read more from Melissa on the London Independent. And up next, we're going to head to the States and look ahead to the NFL wildcard weekend with The Ringer's John Gonzalez. Stay tuned.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. New normal, same old football. Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein powered chicken bites.